Travel warnings continue to be in place. Do not travel to Afghanistan.
Do not travel to Afghanistan.
Foreigners present a significant
risk. We've reviewed our travel advice and continue to advise do not travel to Afghanistan due to the extremely...
Morning light drifts across the cliffs of Bamiyan. Below, farmers move quietly through the fields, their lives unfolding beneath walls that once held giants. You wouldn't guess that his peaceful valley once stood at the heart of the Silk Road, where caravans carried not only silk and spice, but ideas that reshaped half the world. Nearly 2,000 metres above sea level, Bamiyan lies in the heart of Afghanistan's central highlands. A land of thin air, long winters, and a silence that feels ancient. Snow from the Hindu Kush melts into rivers that bring life to orchards and plains far beyond these mountains. Before Islam reached these valleys, Afghanistan was one of Buddhism's great frontiers, where Indian monks and Persian artisans met to carve faith into stone. ...1500 years ago, they sculpted two colossal Buddhas into these cliffs. The tallest in the world at the time, painted in colours that caught the first light of dawn. Around them stretched hundreds of caves, once filled with monks and vivid murals, a mountainside sanctuary watching over the heart of Asia. They've survived earthquakes, centuries of wind and rain, even the fury of Genghis Khan's army when the valley was laid to ruin. At the valley's eastern gate stand two ancient fortresses, Shahr-e-Zohaq, the Red City, and Shahr-e-Golgola, the City of Screams. For centuries, they watched over Bamiyan, guarding the route that once connected Persia to the mountains beyond. When the Mongols invaded, the Red City was the first to fall, its walls burned, its defenders wiped out. Golgola followed soon after. Legend says the king's daughter betrayed the stronghold and no one inside survived. Their ruins still cling to the ridges, silent reminders of how this valley has endured both glory and grief. West of Bamiyan, the colour of the land changes. The stone softens, the air cools, and water appears where you'd least expect it. Six deep blue lakes, suspended between white limestone cliffs, glowing like sapphires in the desert light. This is Bandi Amir, the Dam of the Commander, a name locals connect to Imam Ali, who, they say, struck these cliffs and released the waters that filled the valleys overnight. Today, it stands as Afghanistan's first national park, a sanctuary of stillness in a land shaped by extremes. Each lake is enclosed by natural travertine walls, mineral dams shaped by centuries of snowmelt from the Hindu Kush, forming one of the world's rarest natural lake systems. Seen from above, their colours shift from deep sapphire to turquoise, divided by ridges of white stone and surrounded by high altitude steppe. In summer, locals fish or drift across the still surface in small wooden boats. It's hard to believe that in a country so dry, water can look this pure. Beyond Bandi Amir, the road winds through wind-carved valleys and lonely plateaus where colour fades once more. The water disappears and the earth returns to shades of rust and stone. Here, in the remote central highlands, the ruins of Chehel Burj rise from the horizon. A medieval fortress complex nearly 9 centuries old, its name meaning the Fort of 40 Towers. Built during the Ghurid Empire, it once guarded the trade routes that linked Bamiyan to the west. When the Mongols swept through in the 13th century, Chehel Burj was destroyed. Its towers shattered, its garrisons erased from history. Now its crumbling walls blend into the cliffs themselves, their outlines barely distinguishable from the mountains that swallowed them. Few come this way now. Standing among its weathered stones, you can almost hear the echo of soldiers who once watched the caravans pass and the long silence that followed their fall. Past Chahel Burj, the mountains close in again. The road narrows beside a winding river, the cliffs rising higher with every turn. And then, out of the dust and silence, something impossible appears. This is the Minaret of Jam, built in the 12th century under the Ghurid Empire, which once ruled a vast territory spanning from Iran to India. It stood at the heart of Firozko, the Ghurid capital, a thriving city that vanished long ago, lost to floods and earthquakes. At 65 metres, it remains one of the world's tallest brick minarets. Its surface covered in Kufi calligraphy and geometric patterns that still shimmer after more than 800 years. Some believe it was built to celebrate a great victory. Others see it as a symbol of faith. Local legend even links it to the lost city of the prophet Jonah, adding another layer of myth to its silence. For centuries, the minaret lay hidden, protected by isolation, until it was rediscovered in the 1950s. Today, it's recognised as a UNESCO World Heritage Site in danger. A masterpiece of Islamic architecture in Central Asia, and one of the last traces of a civilization the world almost erased. Yet west of these mountains, that same civilization found new life in a city of poets, kings, and blue-tiled domes that still catch the desert sun. This is Herat, one of Afghanistan's great cultural capitals, whose story stretches back more than 2,000 years. Founded on the fertile banks of the Hari River, Herat was known to the Greeks as Aria, a stronghold captured by Alexander the Great during his march across Asia. Centuries later, it flourished under Persian dynasties, and by the 15th century, it had become the dazzling capital of the Timurid Empire. A renaissance of art, science, and architecture that rivaled Florence. At its heart stands the Herat Citadel, or Kala Ikhtiyaruddin. a fortress first built by Alexander himself around 330 BCE, then rebuilt and expanded by successive dynasties as a royal residence. Its massive mud brick walls have witnessed everything: Persian kings, Mongol invasions, and the rise and fall of empires. When the sun sets, its towers glow above the city, a reminder that Herat has endured everything and still stands strong. Not far from the fortress lies the Friday Mosque of Herat, one of the oldest and most exquisite in Central Asia. Every inch of its surface shimmers with turquoise and cobalt tiles, arranged in patterns so intricate they seem alive. Originally built in the 13th century and perfected by Timurid craftsmen, it remains a masterpiece of Islamic geometry, a vision of order and beauty that has survived earthquakes and centuries of turmoil. North of the mosque, ruins stretch across an open plain. The remnants of the Musalla complex, once one of the grandest ensembles in the Islamic world. Commissioned in the 15th century by Queen Gauhar Shad, it included a madrasa, mosque, mausoleums, and towering minarets, some rising 55 meters, their surfaces glazed in blue and turquoise tile. The surviving inscriptions blend Persian poetry with Quranic verses, reflecting Herat's harmony of art and faith. Though earthquakes and centuries of neglect have reduced it to fragments, the remaining minarets still pierce the skyline. A quiet reminder of Herat's golden age, when calligraphers, astronomers, and poets shaped the soul of an empire. Leaving Herat behind, the road climbs north through dry hills and open plains. The city's turquoise domes fade from view, replaced by silent ridges and the sound of the wind. This is the Band-e-Sabzak Pass, a mountain corridor linking Herat with the northern provinces. Its name means the Green Dam, though the landscape is rarely green. For centuries, caravans and armies crossed here, the same route that once carried goods and ideas between Persia and Central Asia. Today, it remains a lifeline between Herat and the north, a road that threads through a land both unforgiving and endlessly beautiful. Beyond this point, towns grow sparse, and Afghanistan returns to what it has always been. Rugged, tranquil, and captivating. The north of Afghanistan has always been different, more fertile, more connected, a meeting point between Central Asia and the steppes beyond. For thousands of years, this region has been a cradle of civilization. And nowhere tells that story better than Balkh, often called al-Bilad, the mother of cities. One of the oldest continuously inhabited places on Earth, Balkh was already a thriving centre long before Herat rose in glory. It was once the capital of the Greco-Bactrian kingdom, later home to Persian kings, and among the earliest centres of Buddhism in Central Asia. Some say even Zoroaster, the founder of Zoroastrianism, lived and taught here, making this land sacred long before Islam arrived. When the Mongols came in the 13th century, they razed the city to the ground, leaving behind only ruins and legend. Medieval geographers described its walls stretching nearly 12 kilometres, lined with massive defensive towers, fortifications that had evolved over centuries. What survives today are the mud brick ramparts and the remains of the Balkh Citadel, or Bala Hisar of Balkh. Layers of history built atop one another. From above, you can still trace the circular heart of ancient Balkh, its streets once radiating from a sacred centre now marked by the shrine and its gardens. This radial layout, rare in Afghanistan, reflects the city's ancient design, a holy and royal capital whose shape still echoes through the dust like the memory of a vanished empire. Not far from ancient Balkh lies Mazar-e-Sharif, its spiritual heir. In a land divided by mountains, this city has always been a place that brings people together. At its heart stands one of Afghanistan's most breathtaking landmarks, the Blue Mosque, also known as the Shrine of Hazrat Ali. Legend says it was built where the tomb of Ali was rediscovered, centuries after being lost to history. Whether born from truth or devotion, the mosque became the spiritual center of northern Afghanistan, drawing pilgrims from across Central Asia to pay their respects. Thank you. Its surface shimmers with countless blue tiles that change with the light. Pale turquoise in the morning, deep sapphire by dusk. Among its courtyards live white pigeons, believed to be symbols of peace. And legend says they never leave. From the blue domes of Mazar-e-Sharif, the road winds east across open plains that gradually rise into the hills of Samangan province. A quiet region of orchards, ridges, and hidden valleys that feel far removed from the modern world. Here, carved directly into a limestone ridge, lies one of Afghanistan's most remarkable ancient sites. Takht-e-Rostam, the throne of Rostam, named after the legendary hero of Persian epics. This place stands at the crossroads of Persian myth and Buddhist history. Dating back to the Kushan period, it was once a thriving Buddhist monastery, but unlike most, it wasn't built above ground. Instead, it was hollowed from solid rock. At its center stands a circular stupa carved from a single stone, surrounded by meditation chambers cut into the hillside. Architecturally, it resembles India's great Ajanta caves, yet its isolation has preserved it for nearly 2,000 years. Inside its cool, echoing passages, you can still feel the calm of centuries past. Few travellers ever reach this place, but standing among its carved walls, you sense the weight of time. A reminder that Afghanistan's history runs far deeper than the world remembers. From the northern plains, the road turns south once more. The mountains close in, the air cools, and the journey climbs toward the heart of the country. Ahead lies Kabul, a city rebuilt, reinvented, and reborn more times than history can count. For centuries, Kabul has stood at the crossroads of empires, shaped by Persians, Mughals, and countless others who passed through its valleys. Once a key stop along the Silk Road, it became a place where people from India, Persia, and Central Asia came together to trade and share ideas. In the mid to late 20th century, it was often called the Paris of Central Asia, a place of rose gardens, poetry, and open cafes before decades of conflict reshaped it. You can still feel traces of that spirit in the bazaars where merchants call out from behind stalls of spices, copperware, and dyed fabrics. Among the treasures sold here, none carries Afghanistan's soul quite like its carpets. Hand-woven in villages from Herat to Mazar, each carpet reflects the life of its maker. The patterns of the land, the rhythm of the seasons, and the traditions passed down through generations. The dyes come from the earth, pomegranate skins, walnut shells, and madder roots, giving the deep reds and blues that mark Afghan design. Once finished, the carpets make their way through Kabul's markets, continuing a trade that has connected Afghanistan to the world for hundreds of years. High above the sprawl on the slopes overlooking the valley lie the Bagh-e-Babur, the Gardens of Babur. Built in the 16th century by the Mughal Emperor Babur, who chose this as his final resting place, the gardens remain an island of calm above the noise. Terraces of marble and flowing water descend toward the city below, a design meant to mirror paradise itself. From these gardens, Babur once looked north to the Hindu Kush and south to the plains he had conquered. Above the city rises the Bala Hisar, Kabul's ancient citadel, watching over the valley since the 5th century. It has been rebuilt by kings, shattered by invasions, and scarred by modern wars, yet it still stands, a symbol of endurance in a city that never stops rebuilding. Not far away stands Darul Aman Palace, the Palace of Peace. Built in the 1920s under King Amanullah Khan as part of his vision for a modern, independent Afghanistan, it once symbolized progress and hope. Decades of conflict left it in ruins, but its recent restoration returned it to its former grandeur. South of Kabul, the plains open toward Ghazni, once the glittering capital of the Ghaznavid Empire 1,000 years ago. Under Sultan Mahmud, it became a city of poets and scholars. Its palaces filled with art and manuscripts that drew minds from across the Islamic world. Caravans from India and Persia once crossed its gates, carrying with them art, language, and ideas that defined the age. Little of that grandeur survives. Today, two brick minarets rise from the plains, weathered yet intricate. Their surfaces etched with terracotta patterns and traces of turquoise glaze. They once marked the entrance to a 12th century mosque, when Ghazni stood among the great centres of Islamic learning. Now they stand alone above the fields, quiet sentinels of an empire that once connected Asia's great civilizations. East of Kabul, the road descends into the Mahipar Gorge. A narrow passage of rock and river where the mountains seem to close around you. Bridges span the gorge, linking a road long used by traders, soldiers, and wanderers alike. A route that has seen both commerce and conflict for centuries. The drive here is not for the faint-hearted. Sharp bends cling to sheer cliffs, with the river glinting far below. From above, the gorge unfolds in dramatic contrast, stone, water, and sky twisting together in motion. Here, the remnants of empire give way to wilderness, and Afghanistan reveals its raw, untamed beauty once more. Beyond the gorge, the road continues through a region of striking beauty, a land of deep valleys, clear rivers, and forested slopes that seem to rise endlessly into the clouds. This is eastern Afghanistan, where rugged mountains meet pockets of fertile green and villages perch on terraces carved from stone. The air here feels different, cooler, fresher, alive with the sound of water and wind. though scarred by years of conflict, it remains one of the country's most breathtaking and least explored regions. Amid this landscape lies Nuristan, once called Kafiristan, the land of the infidels, until its people embraced Islam in 1896 and it became the land of light. Here, mist clings to the trees in the morning and sunlight filters through the canopy, a rare sight in a country known for desert and stone. Wooden homes rise from the hillsides, their carved balconies and bridges built from the very forest that surround them. The Nuristanis preserve a culture unlike any other in Afghanistan. Their songs, carvings, and festivals echo traditions that reach back to pre-Islamic times. And perhaps even to the Indo-Iranian or Greek ancestors, some scholars believe once passed through these valleys. Their legends still recall Alexander's soldiers, and traces of ancient mountain faiths linger in their folklore. Few outsiders ever reach these valleys. Hidden behind mountains and cut off by the lack of roads, it remains one of Afghanistan's most remote and least documented regions. From Nuristan, the mountains climb higher still, until the forests fade and the air thins. The valleys narrow into the Wakhan Corridor, a remote strip of land stretching between Tajikistan, Pakistan, and China. Here, stone villages line the banks of the Wakhan River, their fields of barley and potatoes bright against the barren slopes. For centuries, this valley has linked Central Asia with the Indian subcontinent. A thread of life and trade that once carried caravans, monks, and explorers across the roof of the world. About 350 kilometers long and only 20 to 60 kilometers wide, the corridor was drawn on maps during the Great Game of the 19th century, a buffer between Russian and British ambitions. Farther east, the land rises above 4,000 metres into the Afghan Pamir, a vast windswept world where the Hindu Kush, Pamir, and Karakoram ranges converge. Here the air is thin, the wind sharp, and the silence endless. Snow peaks shimmer in every direction, some soaring beyond 7,000 metres, many still unclimbed and unnamed. Nomadic Waki and Kyrgyz families still move with the seasons, herding yaks across these high plateaus along routes unchanged for millennia. At its farthest edge, the Wakjia Pass touches China. Though no road crosses it, only glaciers and silence separating the two worlds. Southern Afghanistan feels stripped to the essentials. The land is wide, dry, and unhurried, where days revolve around water, shade, and work that simply keeps life going. Around Kandahar, once the capital of Ahmad Shah Durrani, the founder of modern Afghanistan, history still shapes everyday life. In Helmand, canals built and rebuilt over generations feed the fields that sustain much of the south's economy. Beyond them, the desert takes over. The Dashti Margo stretching across more than 150,000 square kilometres, one of the harshest landscapes in Asia. The people who live here have learned to read the desert. The wind, the stars, the colour of the sand. Signs that tell them when rain will fall or when to move their herds. Dotted with small villages, this emptiness feels endless, yet life persists in ways as old as the dunes themselves. As dusk falls over the desert, the light fades to gold, then disappears into the mountains. The road north climbs into cooler air, through passes that open once more to the Bamiyan Valley. Night settles, the cliffs darken. And then light returns. Flickering across the valley, touching the same fields, the same river, the same people who have always lived here. The same hands that work the land by day now keep their history alive through light. Discover the world. Explore the extraordinary. See you in the next adventure.